Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Show Raiders, episode 549. I'm your host, Andrew, and this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news, and sometimes news that we don't want to talk about, but it's things that we should be talking about at this time. This conversation is a conversation that I had with my daughter. This was originally a YouTube video. I decided to make it a podcast. I'm actually going to release this one for patrons and non-patrons alike, and also it will go on the main feed. This is a conversation surrounding some of my challenges growing up black in America. So this episode 549, enjoy.
What's your problem? What's your problem?
Go ahead, Dad.
All right, so here are the rules. The rules is you can ask me anything, past, present, or I definitely want to talk about the events that are currently happening in the world. Make sure the mic doesn't cover your face. Okay?
Okay.
Because if we do end up posting this, our facial expressions need to be seen by you. Okay? So what's going on? How's life?
It's breezy right now.
Move your hand.
It's okay. Breezy right now.
Okay. This is uncomfortable for the both of us because we're pretty private people somewhat, right? Even though we have, channels and stuff like that on the internet. But I definitely want to, I guess I've been thinking about this for a long time because there are questions that I've always wanted to ask my dad that I didn't get a chance to as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one angle we can go. So as you think about what you can possibly have me to tell you right now as you have me hostage for however long this happens to be, you can ask. Okay, so that's the rule. You can ask me anything about anything, okay? And then I'll do my best to give you the best answer that I can give you, okay?
Okay.
Is that fair?
Okay.
Okay, so first I want to say I'm proud of the fact that you're crossing over to the next step of your life. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I know that this last couple of months have been pretty rough on most of us, you know, your mom and I, and we're trying our best to be the most understanding parents as we can be, even though we don't like you half of the time.
Is that too much information? It's okay, because I don't like you half the time.
Okay, well, fair enough. Right. So, we want to make sure that any information that you want to ask us, you should be free to ask us. And one of the reasons I wanted to do it in this particular format is I don't consider myself that public of a figure. And what I mean by that, I think I'm pretty private, even though I share a lot of information online. And one of the things that I wanted to do is to make sure that I've always given you the opportunity to ask anything that you wanted to ask, whether it was, you know, about me and my dad, or, you know, growing up, you know, my sister and I, or, you know, how I'm doing as a parent, as a dad, and those questions. So this is going to be deep, intentionally. I guess you have the floor. You can ask me, pretty much anything. And if there's a story involved, I'll tell a story and we'll just go from there.
That's very broad though, because I don't really have any questions for you. That's really broad.
Okay. So let's just talk about what's currently happening in the world right now. We have, and I think that's a good place to start. I think we have, situations that occur, especially me as a black man, in America that, you may not necessarily experience, as a young lady. I think that, some of my experiences are a little bit, unique. And that I've gotten a lot of grace with, you know, cops and stuff like that. But some situations have been pretty standard as it relates to cops following me in stores and the proper way for me to behave. But sometimes that's hard to figure out because it doesn't matter what I do because I'm black. There's just already a strike against me as I'm just trying to live my daily life. So we can start there if there's any thoughts or anything that you wanted to consider addressing there. And even you know, trying to make sure I get back home safely, right? So that's another thing, because sometimes, you know, because of, you know, who we are as a people and what we drive, our cars are fairly nice cars, you know, thank God for that. I may not get back home because my car is my car, and I'm a black guy driving it, right? So you may not experience anything like that, right? And then the other conversation too that we can even touch on, and feel free to, you know, jump in at any time, is the fact that most of the individuals that you spent your last 4 years with in your particular school, a good portion of them are white and you're not, right? And I think that what happens with that is we believe that the same advantages that your colleagues and friends have, the same opportunities that we believe that we are qualified for, and they are too, sometimes will get passed over because of the color of our skin. So this is a real conversation. This is not, you know, something I was just going to be like, hey, you know, let's crack jokes and stuff like that. We can crack jokes even during this, you know, conversation. But we know there's some serious matters on the table as far as a cop being on someone's neck for 8+ minutes and then passing away. And they're blaming the health of the guy, George Floyd, or whatever. The autopsy said that it's not because of what the cop did that he passed away. It was because of some health challenges that he had. So we can start, you know, and definitely as I'm thinking about now, definitely prayers to, you know, all the families that are affected by this, to the riots, to all the things that we're seeing and how we're treated as a people. And this is not a conversation that we normally have. So, and because it's not a conversation that we normally have, even though we have segments of it, you know, from time to time, you know, with kitchen talk and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, some of those things that you need to know, how I decide to move when I go in the street as a black man. You need to know that. So, you know, whatever you got, fire away.
Well, I mean, I always wondered, because I was telling mommy yesterday that I shouldn't be, because you were talking about, you know, going out to the store for the car. And I was telling her that I didn't want you to leave the house.
Why not?
Because I'm nervous, because I shouldn't be nervous for you to simply just like go down the street to the store to get an item. But then everything that's happening and people are pulling, they're like, the cops are pulling black men over just for driving, like literally for no reason. And they could, God forbid, they say, oh, sir, please step out the car, and you follow their directions, and then they start doing God knows what for no reason. They could start, they could pin you to the ground. They could just do so many things. And I told her I shouldn't be nervous for you to simply just go down the store. I didn't even want you to go down the street, like to turn the car on. I didn't even want you to go down the street. And like, if that's how it is now, I mean, it was always like that. But then I think, and you just mentioned police following you around in the store. What did you do? So
you're not familiar with that, right?
No.
So basically what happens is because I'm black, right? And I'm a guy. So when I'm in a store, I'm usually there's usually a magnifying glass on me because I'm black. Because the intent is, or the thought is, because I'm black, I may not necessarily have the means to pay for the things that I'm in the store for, right? And so because of that, either the security guard or somebody who's doing the anti-theft protection in that particular store would signal another security guard in the store to follow me around, because they believe, because I just walked in the store, I am potentially or might take something from that store. Now, the truth of it is, okay, in the past, that was the case, right? But as you grow, shoplifting is not something that you want to get caught doing, okay? Because taking something from a store as a black person, specifically me as a guy, there's more that can happen in terms of how they decide to file that report versus if it was a white guy, right? The conversation would be, well, if we charge him the way we're supposed to charge him, his life may be ruined, right? Versus if you charge me the way you're going to charge me, my life won't be ruined, right? So why is there a difference between the fact that if it's the same shoplifting infraction or whatever you want to call it, why are you ruining his life? Why is it potentially ruining his life, but you don't look at it as it's potentially ruined mine, right? That right there just says a lot about how things are done in the quote unquote double America that we're in, right? So if I'm breaking the law, right, granted with due process of how the system's supposed to be, I'm supposed to be charged for whatever that crime is, right, properly. But usually as someone who is black or a minority, but usually as someone who's black, we do not get the same due process as someone who is white. So take, for example, and I may not necessarily have this completely clear, but when the guy shot up the church, right? So he went and he shot up the church. From my understanding, not too long after that, he wanted to have a snack. So they decided to take him to, I think, Burger King or something like that. Now, if I just shot up a church, I'm not going to Burger King, okay? I am going to die, right? I'm not making it out of the church. If I just shot up a church, I'm not making it out of the church alive, right? But this guy shot up some individuals in the church who died. And after that, from what I understand, they took him to Burger King. I don't get Burger King. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. I don't get water. I don't get the benefit of the doubt. Now, granted, for me, you know, and it's kind of a unique situation specifically for me because I've gotten the benefit of the doubt a lot over the years. You've seen it. You know, the one time the cop pulled us over, he told me to get out of the car. He wanted me to get out of the car because he wanted to walk with me where I broke the law. That's not the norm for everybody, right? Usually get out the car, it means either you're going to jail or you may not make it home, right? So I have to make sure that any action that I take is super calculated, whether it's taking the car to the gas station, whether that's going to the store, whether that's going to Walmart, whether, you know, I look at the time, it's 5, 6, 7 p.m., and it's Walmart, and anything can happen in there. I need to make sure that I'm very, very precise on what I do when I leave the house. So as much as you can kind of guide that experience, you don't know who's going to be there. I don't know, for me, you know, speaking, you know, for me specifically, I don't know who's going to be there, but I need to make sure that whatever I can control with that experience, which is sad that I'm even saying that, whatever I'm control with that specific experience, that I do that to the best of my ability, because I know for a fact that there's a bigger picture on what we're trying to do as people, you know, as your parents and even as, you know, individuals who create content on the internet. So I can't lose it on a cop because I want to have an attitude, because I know if I don't have an attitude with the cop and the cop is actually having a somewhat decent day, I may end up going home unscathed, right? So I think these are the things that I have to consider when I am moving about. And I'm pretty familiar with that because, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, it was a chaos time. It was the 80s and all those things that we're seeing now, they're not new. They're just being filmed. Right. So
earlier you said, our experiences would be different for you as a grown black man than to me as a young black lady.
Right. Growing up. Right. Yep.
So if I were to, God forbid I get pulled over, how would I handle that?
First, you have to make sure that the paperwork in the car is legit, right? So the car should be insured, right? The car should be inspected. And I know that there's grace period. Sometimes the mechanic will give you a grace period. If the car's not inspected, you can get a sticker, temporarily and stuff like that. Yes, sir. No, sir. I think that's ideal because you don't know what kind of day the cop is having. Now, it shouldn't matter what kind of day the cop is having because you know the procedures when you pull somebody over, right? If there's actual probable cause, you know what that is, right? There's an actual cause of why they're pulling me over. Broken taillight, low flat tire, weird activity in the car, you know, smoking coming from the car because everybody decides to smoke a joint that day, right? So there's an actual reason why the cop is taking the time to pull you over because he believes that you're swerving because you were drinking, right? You're a hazard on the road, right? So you have to make sure that you're addressing the cop as if you were addressing an adult that you respect. And it's kind of even weird just saying that because I respect the officers for what they do, but I do not respect the small percentage that show us everything that we're seeing right now, right? So as, you know, someone who is protecting the streets, if they are doing that, I respect that, right? But you just have to make sure that it's sadly that you're on your best behavior. Your hands are where they can see them inside the car. You want to turn on the dome light if there's a dome light in the car. So if there's one button to access all the lights at the same time, so as the cop is approaching the car, that he sees everything that's happening in the car. Because if he assumes that he understands what's happening and people are reaching and moving around a lot, he'll unclip the weapon and that could be a dangerous situation. So clarity for the cop, as well as clarity for you as the cop is approaching the car. Have the glove box clean so you're not fumbling looking for the paperwork. Because being black in America, when you get pulled over, it's not because the cop wants to give you a gift. It's because that either he actually had probable cause or he just felt like pulling you over because he had a fight with a family member in his house, right? So now how do I diffuse that so I don't get the brunt of his anger when he's supposed to hold that somewhere, put that somewhere, and do the right thing according to what the law dictates he's supposed to do? Probable cause, cool, check. Pull you over, license to registration. Goes back to his car, check what that is. If it's not right, then you get a ticket, right? If it's right, then he does what he's supposed to do accordingly. So I think just you get nervous, right? Because everybody gets nervous when they get pulled over because you don't know why, right? And even with, you know, the car, I know for a fact that 2016, 2017, so around 2017, I was going to get pulled over while I was driving the Beamer, but I pulled over before he pulled me over, right, on the highway. So I'm on the highway. I saw him kind of like reading my plate because every lane I shifted, he shifted as well. So I was like, okay, so he's ghosting me a little bit. So, or tracking me a little bit. So I was like, so let me kind of like slowly shift down and go to the side of the road. And as I made the stop on the curb, fully over, you know, not on the highway, you know, emergency lane and all that stuff. He looked at me and he acknowledged the fact that, he was tracking me, right? So why was he tracking me? I'm not the only car on the highway, right? So I think that understanding that even if you're on your best behavior, you're following all the rules, if a cop is not having a good day, that could be taken out on you, right? And I think that, which is one of the things that we are trying to make sure that we're letting you know, that being in the car with the wrong people is one of the most dangerous things that you can do. Because prior to the person getting the car, you don't know what they were doing. Now they're driving the car, you're in the car with them. Everybody's trying to have a good time. Everybody's trying to have fun. But in that having a good time, having fun, if your friend is having a conversation and not necessarily paying attention to the road, they're swerving. So it looks like they're drunk. And if a cop is nearby, you're getting pulled over. If he searches the car and your friend has something that they're not supposed to have in the car, guess who's going? Uh-huh. Everybody, right? Which is why we're like, yeah, getting the car is cool. That's why even in the last 4 years or however long it has been, your friends are not allowed in my car. Not only am I I'm a black guy in America, I'm a black guy who looks very young, right? So it doesn't matter. I don't have a chance. So your friend is in the car with me. If she said, if she's white and she says something crazy, guess who's going to jail? I'm going to jail, right? So I think that we make a lot of these things, and you know, I know I joke a lot about a lot of things, and for me, you know, joking is a great therapy for me, just, you know, trying to understand a lot of things that happen in the world. But these things are the facts. I've seen them, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, and we're trying to make sure that, you know, you understand them, because just because you don't experience it, that doesn't mean that you can't take the wisdom that we're trying to give you and just not deal with it, right? I don't get in the car with anybody, right? That's not an accident, because I know that if I get in the car with you and I don't know where you've been, right? I'll get in a car with your grandmother, I'll get with your grandfather, but I'm not going to get in the car with somebody random because I don't know what they've been doing. Because if something happens with them and they had a situation, then now that puts our family in danger. Is that selfish? I don't know. I don't know. Is that self-centered? I don't know. But if I know that either you have a history of being crazy, why am I getting in the car? Right. So that's the long way around the mountain to answer your question. You just have to be on your best behavior. The glove compartment, make sure the glove compartment is clean. The reason you want to make sure that the glove compartment is clean is because when you're nervous, you're fumbling, right? So if there's only two pieces of paper in there, your registration and any other documents for the car, and it's just in an envelope, you could easily just grab the envelope, take it out, and give it to the cop, right? So that maybe helps out the whole situation. If he sees you fumbling, then he's going to, you know, psychologically, he's going to take the fumbling as probable cause that he had the right to pull you over. Weird. That's kind of weird. That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Right. So now you're fumbling. Why are you nervous? Well, I'm nervous because you just blinded me with a whole bunch of lights. Right. But they may use that as probable cause to, you know, check the car and check the trunk. And sometimes they're right, but not all the time.
So when you said, like, you know, say yes, sir, no, sir.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard that when a cop comes up to you and they say, do you know why I pulled you over? I've heard that you say no, sir, even when you do know. And or you say, and I've also heard that you say, yes, sir, even if you don't know.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about that. So for me, that's different because I think that over the years, my ability to like read people have been really, really good. So sometimes I'll answer with the right answer. And the right answer is if I really know, I'll answer. If I don't know, I'll say, I don't know. Right. But I look at it this way. If it's a, for lack of a better term right now, a good cop. Okay. And they pull me over and I know why they pull me over. And I tell them, if he has grace, he'll let me go. Right. You've seen that. Mm-hmm. You've seen cops let me go a couple of times. So if I tell him the truth, he'll let me go. So now I have to decide. When I flip that coin, am I telling the truth that day? I can't lie to the cop.
Yeah,
so I'm not lying to the cop. I'm just not answering the question, right? I'm not answering the question. So if he says, do you know why I pulled you over? I'm deciding if I want to answer yes or no. I'm deciding, right? I'm not saying lie to the cop. Let's be clear. Okay.
Okay.
I'm not saying lie to the cop, but I think that sometimes, depending on the situation, the context of the situation, you have to decide, especially in those nuanced moments, if silent is more important than being vocal, right? Like this time right now is not a time to be silent, which is why we're here, right? So when a situation like that occurs, depending on the vibe that I'm getting from the cop, I then decide how I want to answer that question. So here's an example. Cop says, you know, I'll pull you over because it's a nice day. Did I answer the question?
No.
I didn't answer.
No, you did not answer the question.
I didn't answer the question.
No, daddy.
Because you wanted to see how nice this car was?
That's not answering the question.
That's not answering the question. But is it engaging the cop to see where he's at? Right? So now it's like, okay, if he continues with the joke, I may have grace. See that?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
If he doesn't budge, if his face is exactly as it was, maybe serious coming to the car, and, you know, I try to engage him in humor and he doesn't bite, then I may not get grace. Right? Now, here's the thing. Usually I've gotten grace with driving for the last 15 years, give or take, is because there's nothing on my license. And that's a problem for cops, because they're looking at it and they're like, how is this N-word have nothing on his license? It's clean. How is that possible? How is it possible that in this neighborhood, this guy, whether that was, you know, the neighborhood we used to live at or whatever, doesn't have a record of any infractions or problems on his license? So now what do you do? Do you be the first guy to give me something? Or do you give me grace and let me go because I'm a law-abiding motorist on the road? So now the cop has to decide, is he going to be the prick that day? Or is he going to give me grace? Right? So you have to really pay attention. That's why it's very important that the pulling over is not necessarily a good or bad thing. But I think that understanding how to engage the car, full lights on, glove compartment, addressing the cop with manners, because as a black person, they don't believe we have manners. We're not educated. We don't have any manners. So if you're addressing them, you know, with proper English, whatever that means to them, oh, you speak well, right? What do you mean I speak well? I'm not supposed to. What does that mean, right? That means that you think I'm not supposed to, right? So what does that mean? So if I'm already coming with a negative tier, if I'm B1, I'm not even on the first floor, you don't even assume that I could have or engage a conversation with you? What does that mean, right? So I think that understanding those things are very important. And sometimes I joke around with the cop, and usually that works to my favor. You know, I thank God for that. But I am the rare case. If we weigh all the experiences that you've seen when I've gotten pulled over, I am the rare case that I usually walk away without an issue, which is hard for me sometimes to have a conversation about this, because it's like, well, you usually get off scot-free, but that's not the case. I am still a black guy that could leave here today, go get the car or whatever. And then on my way back, cops and his buddy, Jim, decide to go wild because the car is shining, right? So bright. And they feel like messing with me that day. There's just cases that, you know, I hope that, you know, I always get that grace, but that's not everybody's situation. So that's how I would deal with it. Yes, sir. No, sir. Clean glove compartment. Make sure the lights are working. If your signals are off, make sure you change them. If your front light is out, make sure both of them are working. If it's not your car and it's not insured, you shouldn't be driving it. If you know it's insured, but it doesn't have all the proper paperwork, or the person that is driving the car has a reputation of just wilding out whenever they're behind the wheel, do not get in the car. Take the bus. Call us. Call your mom. Call me. Don't. It's just wisdom. Because having to go through it and just be like, man, I should just listen to whoever that is, right? It's just, you don't need to.
I don't really have anything else to say. I don't really have any other questions.
Okay.
I mean, you, from the questions I asked, you gave me above and beyond answers. So any okay. other questions, you just answered them.
Okay. How's the school stuff?
Fine.
That's good.
Spanish class is making me hate Spanish.
Okay. Okay.
Economics gave me another assignment.
Okay.
Journalism gave me a project. Jim gave me 4 projects for the 4th quarter.
Okay.
But they're easy. They're easy. Okay. They're not hard.
So let's jump back into the riots and stuff, since you don't have any more questions for me. Do you understand why the riots are happening?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do.
Okay. Why are they happening?
Because, okay, so from my understanding,
okay,
the protests started off as peaceful, and then they started getting violent.
Okay.
But I was hearing that it was because of the police and the National Guard and the SWAT teams that were there overseeing the event.
Okay.
And people were saying, we come peaceful. We're coming peacefully, and we are standing in the name of peace. But we can't do that if you are here acting like a normal person, posing as a protester, and then you are the ones that are making, you're starting, I've heard that they're starting, the cops are the one instigating, they're making it violent.
Okay.
They're making it violent, and they're the ones that are starting everything, making it look like it's the people that were originally there. And then on the other side of that, there are people that are the actual protesters. There are people that are starting the looting. They're starting burning, like burning buildings down and setting cop cars on fire and jumping on top of them, smashing the windows, because they're saying, we're coming peacefully and you're not hearing us. But once we start rioting, it's a problem. But when we wanted to be peaceful, you didn't want to listen.
Okay.
So there was like 2 different sides of that. Like I understood where they were coming from. And, you know, I understand, you know, I will say violence is not the answer. But then I get when they say, like, we're coming peacefully and you're not listening. So, like, what else would you have us do?
So there's a lot of layers to that. Okay, so the first major layer is, of course, how we're seen to the world, like as Black people, right? And how we've been treated for so many years, right? And how we believe that the way the laws are written, they're not written with us in mind, right? Those things. And I'm going to speak, you know, very, you know, in a generic sense right now, but I think it still apply. When there's chaos, there needs to be order introduced, right? And the way that order is introduced, we will praise the individual who introduces the order, right? And the person that is potentially going to get praised for introducing that particular order is the commander in chief, right? That commander in chief could potentially set themselves up for whatever that election year is, right? So although that there's just different things that we couldn't necessarily control, as when you think about the pandemic and stuff like that, but when you're using the pandemic and even situations like that to benefit you, that's going to play out in the long run, right? The other side of it is, even with some of the videos that I was seeing, it doesn't matter if the Black couple or the Black person owned a business in that neighborhood. If they were in the neighborhood, they were the one being cuffed and going to jail, right? It doesn't matter if you're a reporter for a major outlet. If you were in that area, you were the one going to the holding cell, right? So which is why it's very, very hard for me to even have contact with a lot of individuals, because I know that even the fact that because of the fact that I'm Black, I could potentially be taken from my family just by being on the scene trying to help, right? Because the protest is something that we're supposed to. So think about this for a second. So we have the Colin Kaepernick situation. He was kneeling, right? A lot of individuals were upset the fact that he was kneeling for what he was kneeling for. Now, are you more upset of what Colin was kneeling or what the cop did when he was kneeling on the neck of George Floyd? Which one are you more upset at? Right? So it's like, all right. So the second one is okay? Right? No, it's not okay. So it seems like no matter how much education we have, no matter how much we want to help the world, whether it's through philanthropy or whatever the case might be, no matter how many individuals we bring up to do better, we are still looked at as second class citizens. Now, will that change? I think that it will only change in the hearts of the individuals who it changes and they decide to do something with that influence, right? Because you talk about the white privilege and stuff like that. If you really want to use your privilege that you don't think you have, if that's you, right, to do to help individuals who are suffering like this, you know, for so many years, trying to do better and trying to like so even recently, I'm not sure if you're aware, you know, there are I'll just use generic terms because I don't necessarily want to use names. If I need to speak to a community about financial literacy, how to handle money, right? In a black community, do you send a white guy? Do you send me? Who do you send? If there's a community that's minorities and mostly black people, and you want to talk to them about financial literacy, do you send someone other than somebody who's black, or do you send somebody who's black who has that knowledge to give to them?
Send the person that's black that has the knowledge.
Right, right. And why is that? Why do you think that is?
Because, well, besides the fact that they have the knowledge.
Okay, go ahead.
Besides the fact?
Right, they have the knowledge, right?
I feel like looking at it like that, if you were to send a white person
or
white man, white woman.
Right.
If you were to send them to the minority, the community, the black community to talk about something, giving information, some people would see that as that person talking down to them.
Could be. And then the other thing too is the fact that I don't know if you understand my journey. That's why songs are so important with certain artists, because whether it's the, you know, whatever that artist is, when they speak to a certain group of individuals, you just receive it different, right? Because you know that this person may have had your experiences as well, because they are your same shade or they're the same color of your skin. They may have had the same background. They may have grown up in the same area. So someone coming from Montana, right, who's highly educated in financial literacy versus someone who has the same exact knowledge base that grew up not too far from your community, who looks like you, it just speaks different, right? And I think that when you look at how individuals are talking about the conversation as it relates to George Floyd and all the stuff that's currently happening in the world right now, if the best course of action sometimes, right, is if you don't have anything to say, it would be much better if you took the time to elevate the individuals who are saying something amazing when you just want to say stuff because you think it sounds cool, right? Because there's a lot of people right now who are just saying stuff because they don't see why this is such a big deal, right? Versus trying to say, I don't really understand, but I'm trying to understand. So because I have a big base or a big following, let me allow you to educate them or amplify you retweet your stuff. So at least they see your message, because even the messaging of, you know, black media versus, you know, other groups, you know, opportunities that we get versus other individuals, even more qualified individuals in the black media space who should be getting way more opportunities than they're getting now, but because they're black, they may not necessarily be getting those opportunities. And it sounds like, why me? Right? Right. It could. But if you're not experiencing that, then you can't really relate, right? It sounds like I need a pacifier, right? But if you are not in that experience, my experience will always be my experience as a Black person, right? But if you're trying to understand, you need to be quiet and try to understand. But if you're not trying to understand and you just want to speak, it's not such a big deal, then you really haven't been paying attention in the last 10, 20, 30, 40, whatever amount of years. Where have you been? Right? And I think that being very mindful of who we're speaking to and how we're interacting with them and stuff like that. I think that for me, and like, you know, someone said to me, I'm going to keep their name to protect them. They said, you've become more Black in the last couple of years. And I know what they mean, because for a while, I didn't really pay as close attention to the Black experience, because my thing is, we're all humans. How come we can't just treat all humans the same, right? But when you play, when you pay closer attention to your community and your people, then you're affected by what's happening more, right? So over the last couple of years, I felt like I was a little bit more removed with those situations, because I believe that, yeah, prayer is good. Prayer works and prayer changes things. That's great. But I really need to understand the pain and the frustration of our people. But I haven't in the last couple of years until recent years, right? So the statement that you've become more Black in the last couple of years, I understood what that meant, right? And I think that we can't ignore the fact that individuals are going through these challenges because we're not as close to it, right? We're an hour plus away, or it's not, you know, because they say a crisis is not a crisis unless it hits your home. Yeah, but it shouldn't have to hit your home for you to understand that, you know, if you're in the car with me and you're white and you're a lady, the cop may ask you, are you okay? Because you're hanging out with me because I'm Black. Right? He's not going to ask me if I'm okay. What if she has a frying pan and she was hitting me with the frying pan? You're not going to ask me if I'm okay, but what if I'm the one getting hit with a frying pan, right? Just by way of an example, but they're always going to ask, right? So even with the Amy Cooper stuff, well, right? You saw that. And the thing that we talked about with all that was, we got two Coopers with some birds and a dog, right? Two Coopers at the same time in Central Park. One is telling you to follow the rules. The other is calling a SWAT team to come kill the Black guy. That's what happened.
Wait, she said kill?
Well, so when, if you haven't seen the video, it's basically she threatens the man and then she makes a phone call and she's basically calling the cops to come get the Black guy.
Yeah, that I heard.
So she threatened him and she called the cops as if they were a SWAT team to her rescue. Right?
Right.
When you call SWAT, that means they're going to come decimate anything that's there. When the police force locally can't do what you're trying to do, the next team that you call is the SWAT team, typically. We see in the movies and stuff like that. Right. We got to call SWAT. We got to call them in. Well, you're calling them in. They're coming in to finish the situation, right? But you're breaking the law of the park. I'm telling you to follow the law in this area. You threaten me and you call the cops as if they were a hit squad to come get me killed, because you understand that if you play the I am in distress white lady towards this human being, then they can potentially die that day and don't go home. So who trained her to do that? How does that happen? I believe that there's some training involved there. No, you're going to say something.
I was going to say either her parents, the way she grew up.
Somebody trained that.
Society.
Somebody trained, and either by observation or table conversations, because there's a lot of conversations that we have here that you hear that you don't necessarily comment on, right? You just say, oh, okay, I didn't see it that way. But you don't necessarily, because sometimes it's not a conversation for you to jump into, right? It's not. We didn't ask, you know, hey, what's your thought on that? We didn't ask that. We were having a conversation. You walk to the kitchen, you grab, you know, whatever, a snack, or you grab something to drink, and then you make your way out. You're like, oh, wow. Right? So somebody, whether by observation or, you know, overhearing or people having wine and they get tipsy and they start showing their real selves, she learned that, right? And then she was like, oh, you think I'm playing? You think you're going to tell me what to do? You think you're going to tell me to follow the rules? And she calls the cops. What happens? It backfires, right? Because when you have video, even though video these days, it should help. It should be clear. In a lot of situations, it's not, right? So now it's like, okay, so it backfires. She loses the dog. She loses her job. Will she bounce back? Will she?
Probably.
I don't know. You know, the same answer I give the cop. I don't know why you pulled me over. Will she bounce? I don't know. Is she sorry? I don't know.
I don't know.
But the fact that that played out the way it did. Oh, you talking to me like you have the right to talk to me? Oh, let me. Really? Okay. And then she goes through that whole. That's not how it sounded. What's the matter? That's not how it sounded. That's how it sounded to me.
That's
something
how it
like
sounded.
That.
I mean,
something
just,
like that.
It's just when you do it.
Something like that.
It's just when you do it.
It was a little crazy.
It was a little.
Right. You go from there to the fact that, you know, he was a very well-educated man, right? Super Marvel fan, from what I understand, loves comics, loves bird watching. That's a thing. I didn't know it was a thing, but that's a thing. I didn't know it was a thing, but that's cool. I think that's cool. Okay. That's his thing. Okay. But does it matter?
No.
Doesn't matter.
Another thing that made me mad was when she said I think I heard that correctly, when she said he's attacking my dog or something like that. Yet she was the one grabbing it by the collar and looked like she was dragging him.
She was pretty much yoking the dog, yeah.
And he was yelping.
Yeah. But here's the thing, though. If there was no video, then who would you believe?
If there was no video, who would I believe?
Who would you believe?
You're asking me personally?
I mean, if you want to answer personally, that's fine.
If I were to hear both stories, honestly, I would believe Mr. Cooper.
So here's the thing, right? Because there's always two stories.
There is.
And then there's the actual truth. Right. So you would hope that there was a witness there, because she would tell her version.
Right.
He would tell his version.
Right.
And then somebody will say, well, that's not what I saw. What's wrong?
Why are you so loud?
I'm just saying. Somebody will say that, right? And you would hope that that person would be like, you know, she was yoking the dog, right? I don't know why their country in the middle of Central Park. I guess they just decided to make a trip, right? And they happened to be bird watching along with Mr. Cooper. They wanted to hang with Mr. Cooper, right? Hanging with Mr. Cooper, whatever.
I don't know. Go on.
Right? So you would hope that there was a witness, and maybe we'd believe Mr. Cooper, because someone will try to find a reason not to believe Mr. Cooper.
Right.
We've been conditioned that way, whether it's through media, because there's one side of, you know, people are in solidarity doing, you know, the protest and they're following the rules. But what is media showing us? Everything else.
The opposite.
Right? So we've been conditioned not to necessarily think for ourselves, we would find it hard to believe Mr. Cooper unless there's witnesses. I'm not answering that question because I don't know.
Now that you mentioned the witness, I don't know either.
That's what I'm saying. So it's easy to say, of course I'd believe Mr. Cooper because he's black. He's one of us. But what if he was the offender for real, though, without the video camera?
Right.
Here's what I'm doing here, right? You see a clip that's 15 seconds of something. It paints the picture that this person is bad, whatever that clip is. You know, a favorite YouTuber, a favorite music star that you like, that clip is taken out of context. Automatically, because you didn't like them for whatever reason before, you saw that 15-minute clip. All of a sudden, now you don't like them even more because the 15-second clip that was taken out of context didn't give the full context of the first 30 seconds before or the 30 seconds after. So now you have a deeper hate for this person that you're not a fan of because of that 15-second clip. But what happened the first 3 or 4 minutes of that? Before the pans or the glasses or the rocks or the bats started flying, of the 15 seconds, what happened there? Maybe they were trying to defend themselves, but you saw them swing a bat and they let the bat go in the 15 seconds, but you didn't see the first 30 seconds. So now you hate them even more. And that's how it's painted. It was good that we got a chance to see the whole thing from the fact that he was like, don't come close to me. Mm-hmm. Don't come close to me. That we got a chance to see the whole thing versus just her. If you saw that, you'd be like, yeah, he must have been doing something wrong. It's that easy. So from, you know, you building your IG, you building your TikTok, you're building all those things. 15 seconds of out of context can change how you look at a person completely. But maybe that they were in the right in a situation, but you didn't give them a chance because all you have time for is 15 seconds. Because our attention span is shorter. It's rare that we're watching a whole, I mean, you do movies and stuff with your mom, which is an hour or 45 minutes or whatever the case might be, but it's rare that we give full attention to those clips and dig in to find out, well, what really happened? We don't do that. We don't have the time or we don't take the time to do that. So without the video, we don't know if you would really believe Mr. Cooper unless we did some digging. And some people do. Great reporters and journalists or investigators and stuff like that, they'll do the digging. But when you have the nerve to tell me that George Floyd died of some other thing other than the knee that was on his neck, come on. Come on. What are we doing here? Right? So it's and I guess one of the reasons I definitely wanted to have this conversation with you is because I believe that is extremely important. And if your generation don't help with the stuff moving forward, we're going to be continually having the same conversation about being pulled over, about media, about how they paint stuff. All those things are going to be conversations that we're going to continually have over and over again. You might be sad when I go to the store. You might be sad if I'm out for a while, because you don't know if I'm coming home. I'm a little off kilter a little bit. I relish the engagement with those opportunities because I believe that I'm always going to come out on the right side of it. That's just me. That's a little crazy. Maybe that's a little bit wishful thinking, but I just believe that, you know, maybe I'm conditioned just the way I grew up, that I've always been calm around chaos. So I always believe that I'm going to come out on the other side. I pray before I leave, so I hope I don't come out on the other side. But I always believe that, you know, if I do the best that I can, and hopefully that best is great that day, that I'll come back home.
It's funny you mentioned that, though, with my generation, because as soon as you said that, it reminded me that earlier today, I was on the phone with my friend, and the senior class, they have a group chat for all of the seniors to connect and talk about anything that's happening in the school or in society. So they made a separate group chat and labeled it Black Lives Matter. And there is a select amount of kids in the group chat, and they were talking about kids in the school that, you know, oh, you didn't know that she or he was this way. You didn't hear what they said or what they did. And I didn't realize how bad it was when I started hearing names that were the same names as the people that I associated with. Like, they mentioned the name of a girl and they were like, oh, she did this and she did that. And she's this way. And she's been doing this. She's been this way since seventh grade. And I'm like, that's interesting because she's really my friend and she's never acted that way towards me. So I find it so interesting. So when you say your generation, if your generation does not help, if it doesn't get better from here, basically.
Like passing the baton.
Right.
Kind of, yeah.
But it's like it's getting worse because they're like, all of these white kids in our school, I'm surprised you guys didn't realize. Like, I'm not surprised that there are racist white kids in my school. I'm not surprised. But I'm surprised that it's the people I thought were my friends. And they've never even been that way towards me. And I'm surprised that I called them my friends. That's the only thing.
All right. So, wow. Okay. Hold on. Give me a second. I need to think for a second. I think trauma and tension introduce to us a different layer to a person. You really know what a person is made of when there's trauma involved or tension of some sort. Or like a big fallout, right? You really know who's really with you in a big fallout. That's what I usually say. You know, I don't want you to be with me just on a mountaintop. You know, where were you in the valley when I was going through, right? Stuff like that. So I think when you introduce trauma, tension, discord, if you will, you really get to see who's really with you and not with you. And I think sometimes those things don't really come out until, you know, situations really pop off, right? Right? Like guns start going off or, you know, chaos in the street starts happening. And, you know, sometimes people will leave you behind to protect themselves. Sometimes they'll save you if you're in a particular situation. And like, even with me in certain situations that I've had in my past where I believe that I was on the right side of the law, but it ended up putting me in handcuffs. And because of that, I had to weigh out, you know, was I wrong at that particular situation? And why am I in handcuffs? And so evaluate all those things. I was in the wrong because I was driving with a suspended license. But the judge still gave me grace because the judge said, if I don't see your face ever again in here, I'll wipe the entire record, right? So even in the midst of those situations, whether it's you know, an adult or individuals in your corner, because there's going to be different individuals in your lives in different seasons, right? Your friends now may not be your friends in the next couple of years. And that's just the truth. And I think that sometimes we try to make peace with that because we try to wish that everybody we started out with from, you know, kindergarten to middle school, we're going to have the same individuals in our lives. But sometimes that's not the case. But unless a real situation introduces itself, then you won't know how the people react. And sometimes you have an idea. And to say that you may not necessarily have been aware of that, there's glimpses of it that's shown. You're talking about 4 years, right? So even though I don't know what the whole situation is, I bet you in the last 4 years, there was hints of it shown. It's 4 years. Because typically people can hold their best behavior 3.5. So within that 3.5 to 4 years, whether that's a relationship, there's always a hint of something crazy. Always. We ignore it because it's our friend. Is it? Right? So there's always something that pops up that says, really? and then you decide, nah, he's just playing or she's just playing. But were they? Probably not. Probably not. So what do you do with that? Do they still, you know, do they still hang out with, are they still your friend? So now you have to decide how you behave, how you move around them, what information you share. Because if they've already shown you that they are not the individuals that are going to be with, I don't hang out with anybody. We've had this conversation.
We have had this conversation.
Right. So let's have it. Let's have it. I hang out. Who do I hang out? I can't even say it. I can't even speak. I hang out with
two or three people.
Content creators.
Yes.
Movers and shakers. Right?
Yeah.
YouTubers, podcasters. Right? Streamers and whatever. Right? Actors. Yeah, actresses.
You say like it. That's a lot of people. That's not a lot of people.
It's not a lot of people. It's like three or four.
It's like two or three.
That do a lot of good stuff in the world.
Yeah.
Right? But my circles are predictable. Are yours predictable? No.
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 My circle varies.
No.
But, so I won't say my circle.
You know why it's not predictable?
No.
Because you're still trying to define. Okay, so this is my projection. I could be completely wrong, which is rare. Okay.
Okay.
Which is rare. Rare. Okay. Because you're still trying to figure out your ideal friend. Okay. And how that fits with everybody that's around you. And I think the hardest decision that you're going to have to make is letting some people go that don't fit where you're going.
Okay. So.
That's all I'm saying.
I did tell you about this, I think, last week or the week before.
I don't know what we're talking about right now.
When I was telling you about how when we were talking about you call them your best friend or you call them, you're not friends with them anymore. So then I really started to evaluate who I called friend, who I called best friend, and who I didn't associate with anymore. And then I was saying, okay, so no, this person is not my best friend anymore. They may consider me that way, but I don't see them that way because of the past we've had. Or this person is not my best friend. We are close, but they're not my best friend. So, like, my circle literally has four people in it. And those are people that I've been friends with since, like, elementary school, junior high. Like, one of my friends, I've been friends with her since elementary. Another, she used to be my bully. And then she stopped being my bully. I won't really say she was my bully. She was just one of the girls that picked on me. And then now
what do you call
she's
that?
No, not a bully. Cause no, she's not. No. Cause it's different when somebody's a bully. So it's like bully is like somebody that's constantly attacking you verbally or physically.
Walks like a duck and it talks like a duck.
Let me finish. A bully is like somebody that, I mean, they verbally offend you, or attack you in any way or physically. She didn't really bully me. It was like she was with the crowd. She was like in the bandwagon. She wasn't the bully. She was like behind the scenes. Like she would laugh when someone said something.
And she was your best friend?
She is my best friend now. She wasn't my best friend before. I didn't even classify her as a friend. But all the people that used to bully me are now my friends.
Okay.
Or my best friends.
All right.
So I had to evaluate that.
Okay. So you want to know what I think about that?
Not really.
Okay.
But go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me see where I want to go with this one. I think best friends are reserved for best times, right? If I'm driving a car, the best time is my time. It's only one of them.
Oh.
That's the best time.
Okay.
So if I run three laps around this track and my best time out of the three laps was 1 minute and 37 seconds, which is a short track or whatever.
Right.
Then that's my best time. There's only one. Now, I know you're still trying to work that out. I'm not going to necessarily ask you to explain, but what I'm saying is the best is only one slot. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
The best way to get to this store without traffic, there's only one. So if I need to navigate in between a store parking lot to get to a particular pizza shop, because that's the best time at 3 p.m. during high traffic, it's only one. So the best category, I try not to do, this is my best friend, this is my best friend or whatever. And I know we're getting into more like, you know, sociology and then, you know, friendship and all that stuff, mm-hmm. as it relates to those things. But I think that the only thing I would have to say there, and then I guess we can touch on one more thing and then we can begin wrapping it up, is be careful who you're calling your best friend. Because usually the persons that, persons, you know, I guess I'll leave it as persons, that are closest to you are the ones that can do the most damage. And I think the last thing that you want, especially, you know, where you're going with your business and your entrepreneurship and all the things that you plan to do for your next level, you don't want the wrong individuals around you because they're not achieving. So yet they're going to keep pulling you as you're trying to achieve. And that's draining because it's like weight. It's like unnecessary weight. It's like having a backpack that's supposed to be like 10 to 15 pounds, but they're adding extra 35 and you weren't planning to carry extra 35. You're only carrying 15. And that's an extra weight that goes in here. It affects everything that you do. It slows you down. And I think that's how I look at best. You know, definitely, you know, give that some thought. And then, yeah.
Okay.
Got anything else?
Not really.
Okay. All right. So then we'll wrap up. Thanks for taking the time to have a conversation with me.
Thanks for having me.